Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of I Pledge Allegiance. This week, we have on Aiden and Vishal, co-founders of Stride. Stride is the leading liquid staking protocol in Cosmos, and they're at the center of a lot of things happening in Cosmos right now, liquid staking, interchain security, and we'll talk about those things today, but we're also just going to get into how Stride operates as a startup, as a protocol internally. How do they consistently ship and execute? They also have unique backgrounds that allow them to have some advantages building in Cosmos. So we'll get a little bit into that. And yeah, I think the goal for this is really just to get to know Aiden and Vishal as people and how they think and hear how that impacts building and scaling Stride. So really excited to have both of you on, Aiden and Vishal. Welcome.
Thanks a lot, Derek. We're really excited to be here.
Yeah, thanks so much.
So I think most listeners are at least somewhat familiar with Cosmos and maybe Stride, but for those that aren't, could you give just like a quick summary in like a minute or two about what Stride is and what the core product you guys offer is?
Sure, I can jump in with that. So Stride is a liquid staking off-chain in Cosmos. For those unfamiliar with Cosmos, the way that I think about Cosmos is every blockchain in Cosmos is also an application, and every application in Cosmos is also a blockchain. They're kind of interchangeable. And the service that Stride provides within Cosmos is liquid staking. The reason that this is valuable in Cosmos is lots of the staking yields in Cosmos are super high. They can be 20% for the Cosmos Hub, but up to 50 or 60 or 70% for some of the newer chains. And because every application is also a blockchain, each blockchain has its own staking token. So you end up with all these tokens in Cosmos, and they all have really high staking rewards. So you sort of need liquid staking in order to use these tokens for other purposes. They could be simple purposes like using tokens as collateral in money markets, or you can do more interesting things. Like, for example, we're working with Stargaze to use liquid stake SARs to purchase NFTs. So very similar to liquid staking in other ecosystems, although I would say in Cosmos, it's needed even a little bit more urgently because every chain has its own staking token, and those staking tokens are often integrated into the economies of those chains.
Really helpful breakdown. And I'd love to learn a little bit more about your guys' thought process and sort of what led you to build liquid staking for Cosmos. Like, I'm sure you guys did some exercises and spent a lot of time breaking down, like, okay, what should we build in crypto? Where should we build it? How should we do it? And I think liquid staking in Cosmos is a very important thing, but it's definitely like one very specific niche of the market.
Yeah, that's a great question. I can jump in here real quick. So actually we're ideating for, I think, quite a bit of time. So when we first started talking about doing something crypto, we all were living together over COVID. We had kind of a house, and so it was Aiden, Riley, and I, and a few other friends, and we would like look at different DeFi applications. We were first in like ETH DeFi, then got pretty into Solana DeFi, then start exploring different spaces like Polkadot, Cosmos, obviously, and a few others. We were originally pretty excited about like Solana DeFi, but then as we learned more about Cosmos and saw more of like the scaling issues and the outages the big L1s had, we got more pushed towards this app chain vision. We're starting to think about what is actually the potential of app chains. And as we thought about it more and more, we thought their app chains were terribly mispriced and DeFi was really scarce relative to their potential future. And there's a few things I think that were holding app chains, particularly Cosmos, from hitting real mainstream adoption at the time. One was definitely that it's harder to build an app chain. Like, there's more infrastructure required. There's more social coordination. There's more development's a little bit slower and takes more time to get audited. There's not as much of like a stack built around supporting the Cosmos devs or these like ETH devs. But this felt to us very solvable down the road, and something that over the next 5 years would get much, much better. We'd see much more parity with app chains and smart contracts. They were very mispriced relative to their potential. But then the other thing that we thought was really attractive about Cosmos is there was all sorts of really amazing tech being built. But for whatever reason, DeFi hadn't really taken off. Part of the theory that we had is a lot of the core primitives that existed on Ethereum or other DeFi ecosystems hadn't been built yet in Cosmos. But once those had been built, you could build really amazing products on top of those primitives, given all the flexibility of kind of, you know, the Cosmos stack. So we started looking at the Cosmos and then thought about what is the thing that really was holding the space back the most. And we spent probably like, I would say 6 months just kind of playing around different applications in the space, building small projects anonymously, kind of learning more. We ran a small validator for a period of time, just kind of getting our feet wet in the space. And the thing that we came across with that was most challenging in our minds was just that there was this inherent trade-off that even we were facing between staking our tokens and participating in DeFi, and thought this was like a pretty pervasive problem without the space, and was probably the first pyramid need to exist to really kickstart a lot of the more sophisticated DeFi. And to that end, then we learned about IBC V3 and kind of all the new features that are coming out of IBC, and realized everything was sort of fitting together perfectly to kind of launch liquid staking Cosmos. And then that's how we ended up where we are here.
Did you guys speak with a lot of Cosmos people, like teams? Like, were there any conversations in particular that got you guys really excited about Cosmos and the need for a liquid staking product here? Or was it really more just like tinkering around yourselves and realizing you wanted to build something that you would use?
We didn't talk to too many Cosmos teams early on. Riley and I actually went to UC Berkeley and we graduated with a few of the early Cosmos builders. Actually, I guess the early Cosmos builders dropped out. They made the smart choice to go right into building, and we stuck with it. But we would have graduated the same year as Sunny on Osmosis, and Fede from Evmos actually spent some time at Berkeley as well. So we had a lot of overlap. And one thing we noticed was in Cosmos, there's a really nice mix of builder ideology as well as actual execution. I think a lot of other ecosystems, sometimes they tend to one extreme or the other. They execute really fast, but there's a little bit of ideology missing, or they're very ideological and they're missing or lacking on execution. But especially Osmosis, I think, is a great example of this. They're, I think, quite ideological, but also really strong builders. So we had a couple of early chats with those teams, but we were mostly kind of in a cave. So before we actually started building Stride, as Vishal was saying, we were pretty methodical about how we thought about what we wanted to build. Like Vishal said, we were thinking about building in DeFi. And without liquid staking, it's just really challenging to build anything in DeFi. Like, we thought about building stable coins, lending platforms, more interesting DEXs, but none of it really worked in our opinion without liquid staking tokens. So we actually had this like matrix of things that we could build in Cosmos, and we ranked them across all these different dimensions. So we thought about like regulatory risk, how challenging it would be to build, competition. At the time, like, stable coins were really competitive because UST was still around. So there were all these different things that we considered, and we kind of made the decision in a vacuum. It was mostly just Riley and Vishal and I kind of trying to think from first principles about what made the most sense to build. And I think we started building in early May. And for the first 2 or 3 months, we made a couple of key hires. So we hired a really solid backend engineer and a really good front-end engineer. And then the three of us all program as well. But we didn't really spend much time communicating with the outside world. So from around May through August, we were really just coding every single day. I don't know if we took a single day off. And then in August, we started talking more with other teams and, you know, kind of showing them that we had this product, but I feel like we didn't really talk to anyone while we were building. Vishal, I don't know if you remember any conversations with Cosmos teams that I'm forgetting.
No, I think that's right. We didn't talk to very many people. We actually did talk to a few projects very early on, although I don't think they actually led to anywhere, either for technical reasons, like the chain didn't have ICA yet, or it was just like too early for a product to be useful. I remember we had the initial design for Stride, like how we use ICA to liquid stake. We ran that by a few, I think like very early Cosmos builders who gave us some design feedback, but nothing on like a strategic or business development perspective, I think.
Yeah, super interesting to hear. You guys really didn't have that many conversations early on. Is that something, looking back, that maybe you would have had a little bit more? Or do you think like the early focus on actually building a product was the right move? Like, would you have done anything differently looking back?
Yeah, it's a good question. On the one hand, my gut instinct is like, oh, it's always really good to talk to your potential users first and validate demand. That's like, you know, pretty universal startup advice that you get, you know, arguments out of crypto. And it does make a lot of sense, I think, to talk to these users and not to make sure that there is demand for building. But on the flip side, given our very specific situation, I think we had a reasonable idea that there would be a lot of demand for this product, in particular because it has already been heavily validated in other ecosystems at the time. So ETH is always the big one. Billions of dollars demand there, but also in like Solana, we saw it take off a little bit on Polygon as well. And we already seen other spaces where there was demand. And then from our own kind of small personal experiences in Cosmos, we're staking most of our tokens, particularly for this reason. And that felt like a little bit of validation. And then we had this kind of very interesting dynamic, I think, with liquid staking, where people had reasonable confidence that it was like a high value product. Like there was demand from users or chains for it. But it was, I think, a space where being first matters a lot because there's a lot of network effects that you establish. And there's a lot of incumbent advantage, just both from brand perspective, from like being more Lindy, but then also from establishing BD and getting early liquidity from like early adopters. We'd spent a decent amount of time looking at liquid staking other use spaces and saw what succeeded there. And so given that, we were kind of in like a sprint mode, I would say, from pretty much like the day we decided we're going to do liquid staking Cosmos. From that point on, like I said, I don't think we took a single day off from coding. It was like pretty much just an all-out sprint for the next 3 months to get a live chain that could actually do liquid staking. And then we did more of like the go-to-market and validation. I actually think that was the right move, despite being kind of counterintuitive to, I think, the standard tech intuition.
The only thing I would add to that is I think the most valuable conversations we could have had at that point would have been with teams that had decided not to launch DeFi on Cosmos because of this lack of liquidity and because of the high staking yields and the hurdle rate. But those teams are really hard to find because they never ended up launching a product. So we had this thesis, which was DeFi will come to Cosmos once liquid staking tokens exist. And I think it's been validated to some extent, but it was really hard to validate before launching a liquid staking product, because I think a lot of teams that had wanted to build DeFi and Cosmos at the time might have just gone elsewhere, because without liquid staking, it's pretty challenging.
Yeah, I think definitely different to how a lot of startups think about building and validating demands before diving in. And I think this is especially true for crypto startups, which I would say most of which spend too much time having conversations with others and going to conferences and sort of staying up with what's going on instead of being heads down. So I think definitely good just to hear how focused you guys are. Do you feel that part of the culture has stayed with you guys? And is that something intentional you guys really focus on?
Yeah, well, one thing I'll say about that is I really think, as Vishal alluded to, this initial 3 month long sprint, I think it was the hardest thing that I've ever done. And Vishal, I'm curious to hear from you what your experience was like. But I think that really set the tone for our culture. It was sort of like the founding moment. And I mean, one of the slides in our initial deck was like, we need to ship fast and we can. Riley and I were CS project partners back in school. So we had done a little bit of this together. And I think Riley and Vishal at Bridgewater had also done a bit of this, but we were pretty confident that we could kind of sprint for 3 months. But I think it really set the tone for our culture internally. Even now, there's sort of like an afterglow of this sprinting moment. And it has positives and there are pros and cons to it, I think. On the one hand, in crypto, like everything moves so fast, so you do need to ship fast. But on the other, it's not quite like the move fast and break things culture, because if you break things, the consequences can be extremely severe. So I would say there's a bit of a balance, but we do always try to ship fast and execute, because it's really hard to know if something's going to work until it's on mainnet and people are using it. So we just try and get things out in the wild as fast as we can.
Just to double click on that 3 month sprint, what was so difficult about it? Like, was it just a lot of hours? Was it difficult intellectually and mentally? Or was it just like the sheer amount of work? Like, what was the most challenging part about it?
It was really all of it. So at the time, I think we wrote our first line of code on May 4th, roughly, and we shipped Stride to mainnet on September 4th. And on May 4th, none of us had written a single line of Go code before in our lives. And Go is the language that the Cosmos SDK is written in. So we had to learn Go. We had to learn the Cosmos SDK, which is pretty challenging. I would say the documentation for the Cosmos SDK and IBC it's not really there. So it's getting better. But at the time, we just spent a lot of time like reading through the code. We had all these weird bugs that we were running into. And we were kind of on the cutting edge of IBC. No one had used interchain accounts in production before, which is the technology where the Stride protocol can control accounts on other chains. This is how we run all of our staking and unstaking logic. So there were really big technical challenges, but not just on the blockchain side, like on the infrastructure side as well. It was extremely challenging because there aren't good testing environments. Well, now there are, but at the time we had to kind of create our own local testnet environments using Docker. So there were like all these Web3 problems, all these Web2 problems. So the engineering side was challenging. The other challenge was just the speed and the timeline that we'd imposed on ourselves. Like 3 or 4 months to ship a blockchain is really quite aggressive, I think. We had this kind of funny thing where we were drinking a lot of Red Bulls at the time. And I think we ordered so many Red Bulls from Amazon that they had flagged us as a distributor and they like banned us from ordering more Red Bulls. It's kind of a funny moment. But yeah, there was just a lot going on. And then towards the end, we were also trying to do marketing. So we'd kind of like wake up around noon. We would take meetings from noon to 6 p.m., maybe do a podcast or something like that. And then 6 p.m. through 4 a.m., we would just code. So there was just a lot going on. Vishal, I'd love to hear. I know there's a lot of kind of funny stories. I'm sure you have some as well.
Yeah, that's totally right. The Red Bull thing was kind of funny. It was a great moment. We got banned from Amazon. Yeah, I'll add two things. One is a lot of difficulty here was just that we were totally unfamiliar with both Go as a language, but then also the Cosmos SDK and IBC. And the given thing we were doing was relatively novel. Like we were the first production chain to use both ICA or ICQ. The debugging process for that took us quite a bit of time. I remember distinctly, there was a moment, like, I think 6 to 7 weeks in when like we kind of had a really simple version of Stride working locally, where we realized we could just hop into Discord and ask like the IBC devs questions and they'd respond to us. And that was like a groundbreaking moment because until then, we'd only been debugging by running code or reading the source code. And that was like the only way we were getting up to speed. So I remember that was like a shifting moment, but it was kind of funny. We spent a long time just like basically fumbling around in the dark. But I think that was a lot of our dev experience. And the second thing, this question, I think is a really good one of, did this initial sprint kind of shape our culture now? And I think yes, to Ian's point. And then we still have a kind of culture shaping really fast and trying to monitor results quickly. I think we have a key advantage in that we have very clear KPIs in liquid staking and that there are clear things we're maximizing. And a lot of the growth that we try to do in liquid staking is kind of like horizontal in that we expand to either new products, like new UMI, for example, or expand to different like DEXs or lending markets. But these things are somewhat repetitive in that, you know, there's kind of a similar playbook. So I think we spent a lot of time trying to develop a playbook for each of these integrations. And then a lot of that simplifies the execution going forward. And that takes a little bit longer to do the first part, but then we can now like delegate this to other people and then do like the same strategy we did on DEX 1. We can now can do on DEX 2, then lending market 1, lending market 2. And that's allowed us to scale a little bit faster. One thing that I've noticed that we do at Stride, I think it might be a little bit different than other companies. And I'm not even sure if it's good. Like it might very well be that, but I think it's definitely the pattern that we've gotten to is I think when you're like cutting down a tree, there's like two strategies you can do. One is like you can sharpen your axe for a long time and then come in with a really like sharp axe and then cut down a tree. Where I think of this as like spend a lot of time planning and like think through the right execution strategy and like planning, like, you know, what is the optimal way to do this? And then spend a relatively quick amount of time executing because there's been a lot of strategic planning. The other strategy is to take like your rusty old knife and just like keep sawing away at the tree. And that's just like, don't really think too much, just like make steady progress towards the goal. It's not at all obvious. The second one is actually like the optimal strategy for most startups. But I think it's definitely the culture we have at Stride, where we definitely prioritize shipping something and getting things out the door and getting real feedback and then iterating on that quickly after the fact, as opposed to planning a lot, making something really excellent and shipping a really, really thought through and polished final product. And then we do much more like small ships with iteration to try to get to a good outcome.
Really well said, and love that analogy. Another thing which I know you guys think is an interesting part of your culture slash is just like the internal decision-making process. Aiden, you've talked about how you guys have debate a lot internally and have a lot of discussions. How did this come about? How have your backgrounds at previous hedge funds and working at big tech, like how has that shaped the just internal debate and decision-making process?
Great question. I think you're totally right. We do a lot of debate every day. I would say roughly half of our time is spent talking to each other to figure out what the right strategy is or what our opinion is on a certain thing. Like quick examples are, should we prioritize feature A or feature B? Should we move towards DEX A or DEX B? Should we think about launching this product or wait a few more months or any sort of these decisions? I think we spend a tremendous amount of time getting in sync and making sure we have the same one view on the world. And then two, like the way we're going to analyze that view of the world. Riley and I both came from Bridgewater, which has a lot of pros and cons. But one thing I think they did really well is taking a very humble view of your own view of the world and making sure that you use real data and kind of first principles thinking to make sure that whatever priors we have about the way things should work are really grounded in truth. We try to like maintain this pretty strongly at Stride, where we don't try things for granted and try to really make sure that our view of what will happen is right. And we are comfortable, I think, spending a lot of time making sure that initial step is correct. And so we do spend just a ton of time, I think, making sure we're all in sync. But it also gets easier over time. I think we're spending less and less time on it going forward, because over time we start to align on the same view of the world and we start to get much better communication habits. And coming into a meeting, we already have pretty similar starting points. And also, I think we've grown to kind of adapt our way of thinking to be more and more better understanding each other's ways of thinking ahead of time, and kind of before meetings kind of already have a decently good impression of what's going on. But yeah, we tend to do everything by consensus. So almost nothing I think we do is a unilateral decision. Almost anything that's meaningful, we'll either talk about quickly or in depth if there's any amount of disagreement. I think is relatively unique compared to most other companies in the space we've talked to.
One thing I've noticed, and I do not mean this in a bad way, is I meet a lot of folks who've worked at Bridgewater and they talk a lot, whether it's explaining their own theses, loving the debate, but they all tend to talk, like when they want to talk about something, they talk a lot about it. Why is that, and where does that come from?
Yeah, that's a great observation. And I've also noticed this. I think Bridgewater puts a lot of value, especially in the first few years when you're there, of making sure everyone thinks in like the Bridgewater style thinking, and making sure that people really spend a lot of time reflecting on what kind of maybe assumptions they're making that they shouldn't be making, or kind of analyzing their own thought process. And I think that's a big part of, especially the early years of Bridgewater, is kind of just perfecting your like your process towards approaching problems as opposed to actually the problems themselves. And they have a lot of leeway to do this, I think, because they're an incredibly profitable firm. They have really well-built out systems and processes in place. They aren't really at risk. You know, if you're like a second-year analyst at Bridgewater and you're not producing kind of output, it's not that big of a deal at Bridgewater. Like, they're going to kind of run an autopilot. But it's really important that people who are there get trained up to be really excellent thinkers. And then later on, they start actually like dealing with touching Bridgewater's more meaningful ways, that they have, you know, a really excellent way of viewing the world. And so I feel like it's just kind of this general process of they have like already a really excellent system, and then they want to only make modification system if that it meets like this really high bar. And so I think that leads to the system where you do a lot more discussion than action. And that's not like a bad thing. I think given their like objective, I think that's the right move. It has been, I think, a little bit challenging for us because we do not have that same luxury. Like, we are a very early stage company, and really it does matter that we ship a lot. And so I think thus far we haven't really traded off a discussion with doing. We'll like discuss during the day, and then we'll set like a deadline of either tomorrow or the day after to action that thing, and then we'll meet again after that thing is actioned. I think thus far it's just traded off with sleep, although we'll see how things go. I think as we hit more and more capacity, we'll see if we maybe have to discuss less or plan or action a little better.
Okay, so you guys did this 3-month sprint, and was this before or after you guys fundraised?
Immediately after. So we started last April and kind of closed in mid-May. So like right around when we were fundraising, when we started coding, but we had already kind of gotten the early commitments.
I was going to say it would have been very difficult to do both in parallel. So good to knock out the fundraise before sort of diving in.
Yeah, quick fun fact on that one. We actually got assigned term sheet, I think like 2 days before the Terra collapse. So we kind of just barely made it. We got, I would say, very lucky with that fundraise.
Totally. No, I think I've heard stories from other startups deep into fundraising, and then some of these big events happen like FTX, and it's just a big X factor. So good timing, definitely. Taking a step back and just talking about liquid staking a little bit more deeply, I'm sure you guys have studied liquid staking on other chains and in different ways. What are some lessons you've learned from other projects? And again, I'm sure like Lido is the most obvious example. It's established itself as the leading project doing liquid staking on ETH. And they've done a few different things. Curious sort of if you guys did spend time looking at Lido and other projects, and if there were any major takeaways that came to mind.
Yeah, we spent a bit of time looking at Lido before launching. We surveyed different ecosystems and we looked at liquid staking products in lots of them. One kind of very interesting thing about the Cosmos ecosystem is each individual chain is much smaller than other ecosystems. But if you sum them all up, it's actually kind of close. The staking market is close to Solana or ETH. I mean, I think Solana might even be smaller now. And the staking rewards even slightly exceed ETH. So kind of just a fun fact about the different ecosystems as we were surveying them. But for Lido in particular, I think there were sort of two things that we learned from Lido's execution strategy. So the first is, as Vishal alluded to, launching first, I think, is really important. There are lots of other things that you need to do that are sort of table stakes, like protocols should be trustless and safe and have a good brand and all these things. But launching first just gives you such a huge premium. And I think we saw this play out in the Ethereum ecosystem. And this was a huge lesson that we took. And it was sort of our guiding principle as we were sprinting. Like, we really wanted to launch Stride as the first liquid staking protocol in the Cosmos ecosystem. I think the second thing that we noticed was Lido and most of these other liquid staking protocols, they typically did one thing really well in their individual ecosystem. So for example, Marinade on Solana, I think also launched slightly before Lido on Solana. But one thing that it seems they did really well is integrating with Solana DeFi protocols. So they were very Solana native. Lido, I think, does a lot of things very well in the Ethereum ecosystem that are specific to Ethereum. For example, they have their sort of validator selection mechanism, their staking router. And I think they did that pretty thoughtfully. They also have a really good research forum, which is, I think, a bit more of the culture on Ethereum versus Cosmos. So for us, as we were thinking about Cosmos, rather than trying to like have the best research forum or think about the perfect staking router, we tried to think about like what is the most important thing in Cosmos and sort of trying to be ecosystem native. And two things I think that we focus on a lot are delegation strategy. In Cosmos, governance and delegations are a really important part of the culture. So we think a lot about that. And the second is Atom, or the Cosmos Hub, as the center of the Cosmos ecosystem. So for us, ST Atom, I would say, is by far our largest token, and we spend a lot of time and effort on it. So trying to be pretty ecosystem native, I think, is something that we've seen other liquid staking providers do well.
Both of those are such great points. I want to dive into both of them a little bit. The ecosystem, a lot of respect for what the Lido team has built, but they just don't have the same level of dominance on chains like Solana or previously Terra that they had on Ethereum. And I think, yeah, a lot of that is due to the very chain-specific dynamics, whether it's partnerships or integrations or just stakeholders. I think it's a little bit of all of it. Do you think that's something specific for liquid staking?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And it's one I've thought about a bit and don't have a perfect answer to. But I think in general, there's this sort of weird thing in crypto where people talk about the end state of crypto as abstracting blockchains away. And, you know, people using products and not even realizing there's a blockchain on the back end, or especially in Cosmos, people talk about this. And I think there are some chains in Cosmos that are a little bit less focused on being part of the Cosmos ecosystem and more focused on building their product and just abstracting the blockchain away. But for the most part, I think products are very tied to their ecosystems, and there's a small group of people that really care about and are engaged with that ecosystem that use the core DeFi protocols. So it's a bit hard to say how it'll change in the future, but I think for the most part, most DeFi protocols do best in their own ecosystems. I don't know if it's a focus thing where the teams only have bandwidth to focus in their ecosystems, and when they go cross-chain, it's sort of half-hearted. Or if other ecosystems sort of reject outside protocols coming into their ecosystem and would rather have something that's homegrown, it's a bit hard to say exactly what the cause is, but I definitely think that this exists.
Yeah, I think that's a really nice way of framing it. And the good follow-up question is, your first point was just about the importance of being first to market and launching ahead of your competitors. Is that also something that is specific to liquid staking? Because I would argue that it's more important in liquid staking compared to other verticals in DeFi, like lend and borrow, or even DEX. Like, I think, and the reason I say that is with liquid staking, it just feels like there's a little bit more, like once you stake and actually mint the tokens and and start using them for stuff. It's just a higher bar to undo that compared to moving between DEXs or moving between lending protocols even. And there's like longer lockups, there's more friction. I'm curious if you guys would agree with that.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with it. And I think there's two main reasons that this is true. I think the first is liquid staking protocols have pretty strong network effects. So like the more people that use the liquid staking protocol, the more useful it is. And this is mainly due to liquidity and integrations. I think with liquid staking protocols, liquidity can beget liquidity. It depends a little bit on how the liquid staking protocol is designed, but I think the end outcome is often that. And as more integrations come online, the liquid staking tokens themselves become more useful. And as more people use the liquid staking tokens, more integrations come online. So there's a sort of network effect that grows as liquid staking protocols have been live for a longer period of time. That's harder for newcomers to overcome. And the second reason, I think, has to do with security, or this like sort of perception of liquid staking protocols being Lindy. I guess if you're a user and you're just thinking about which liquid staking protocol should I use, I think mostly what you care about is security, because when you're just holding the base asset, that's usually one of your largest holdings. And you don't really want to have to think about like protocol risk. And this might be a hot take, but I think the longer a DeFi protocol has been live, the more you can trust it. It's like some function of how long it's been live and how much TVL has been in the DeFi protocol. But I think like the truest way for a protocol to show its security is to have been live for a long time and not have had any exploits. For example, like Uniswap, I don't know, Uniswap V2, I'm not sure how many audits they've had. Could be 10 or 15 or something like that. And there might be another DEX with 30 audits. But because Uniswap has had so much TVL locked up in the protocol, it's really battle tested. And I think especially for liquid staking tokens and liquid staking protocols, which can attract huge amounts of TVL, I think Lido is the top protocol on Ethereum by TVL. So this security and Lindy effect really matters.
Yeah, really, I think, helpful way of framing it. And we could talk about liquidity for the entire podcast. It's something that I think is so important, obviously, to what you guys are doing. And I'm sure you guys have had endless discussions internally about liquidity, how to attract it, how to keep it, how to build moats around it. I'm curious if you're able to like sum up the months of discussions you've had around liquidity and how to track it. Like, what would you sum up as your strategy? Like, how much do you think about having good brand and UX and on-ramps as a way to build liquidity? Or is it more like, hey, let's do everything we can possibly do to attract liquidity very early on?
Yeah, it's a really good question. The way I think about it is liquidity is the goal. And that's ultimately the thing that is going to really help differentiate product A from product B, or like LSTA from LSTB. But to get liquidity, it gets much easier if you have these other things. So if you have trust, if you have like safety, security, you have good UX, it makes the processing of liquidity much easier. People are, one, more confident in your project's long-term ability. You get more distribution around the project itself, which allows more people to like learn about the project and actually start participating in like providing liquidity. And then it also makes like more novel ways to track liquidity more attractive. So I think a few like key ways to attract liquidity that we've seen, not only in Cosmos, but elsewhere too. First is obviously incentives. Incentives are much more valuable if the project has a really good brand, really good trust, has confidence in the project's future success. It usually means people are more interested in taking the project's incentives. So that's like the first reason. Second, though, we've seen like protocol-owned liquidity or liquidity from insiders. So this is either like foundations or community pools providing liquidity, either spur DeFi on their own chain or as a way to get more yield on like assets that are kind of just sitting around. So examples of this could just be like the Cosmos Hub community pool, or maybe like the Juno community pool, or maybe it's the Stargaze Foundation or wherever it happens to be. For these, I think the brand and the safety in the protocol matters a ton, especially when these parties are picking between two LSTA providers. So I think for a lot of these sorts of institutions or organizations, they tend not to want to split up their liquidity too much. And so it helps a lot to be like the first one in the door and be the most trusted name and spend a lot of time kind of focusing on that. And then the last way I think to attract liquidity is actual like trading usage. So people are actually trying to transact between token, you know, your LST and the base pair. And that drives up fees on like the actual pool, takes more people on to provide liquidity. And same thing there. I think this all relies on safety, security, good UX, et cetera. So yeah, I think the way we thought about it is before launch or in the process of launching, we need to establish a really good brand and really good trust and safety. because that'll make this goal of liquidity easier. I think when we actually initially launched, we somewhat flipped this and we're going for liquidity first before doing other stuff. And we found it much easier to get the liquidity and track liquidity once we establish your brand a little more and more raise confidence in the public that Stride is a safe protocol.
Question that came up in my mind while you were describing some of these organizations and how our users using Stride, like, do you have a sense of, call it like the top like 50 users of Stride, like, would you say you have a good sense of who they are? Have you guys spoken to them?
So we try to track all the usage on Stride in terms of like, are people using STAtom on like AMMs or using lending protocols or where are they using it? It is really easy to identify like which wallets using Stride and where they're ultimately deploying it, but it's very hard to identify like who owns those wallets, you know, on purpose. It's part of the design of the chain. Some of our power users are publicly doxed, like they identify their Twitter with their on-chain entity through ICNS. So it's really easy to go ask them questions about what they are finding useful in the product or, you know, kind of what they enjoy, features they want, et cetera, because, you know, they're very public about they're the user using Stride. For other users, we don't have a clear way to talk to them. I think there's some infrastructure for this on Ethereum. It doesn't really exist in Cosmos. But what we're able to do is kind of map their on-chain journey. So for power users to do like really large transactions, we can see this person, you know, liquid stake like $500,000. Then they went and minted a stablecoin against it, or they went to deposit an AMM on Osmosis. So we can track these like big picture journeys, but we aren't able to talk to them directly.
So you're tracking the way that users are using these liquid staking assets. Is it any different than what you guys expected going in? Like any major realizations, or what are users prioritizing these assets for?
Yeah, definitely. I think the main use case that we've seen is, at least so far, is borrowing against ST assets. So depositing into a lending protocol in order to borrow either like Atom or USDC or some other Cosmos token against it. The one that I was a little bit surprised by, but we've also seen good amount of demand for, is minting stablecoins against ST tokens. And totally makes sense as a use case. It just hasn't been as big a driver of demand on other ecosystems as we've seen in Cosmos. I think it's been something that has had much more demand than expected. Silk is the one that really comes to mind of a product on Shadeswap where you can mint Silk against ST tokens, and same with USK on Kujira. And both of them, I think, very rapidly, they're caps on how much of the stablecoin you're able to mint. So that's been a little bit surprising. One thing that we thought has been like less popular than we previously expected is like a dual ST AMM. So something like if you pair ST Atom against like ST Osmo or ST ETH or something like that, theoretically, it should be a much more attractive pool because you don't really pay staking, you don't like lose out on staking rewards while in the pool. So even if you make relatively little from LP fees, our thought was, you know, it'd still be an attractive pool to participate in. And we found that that's not as true so far. And it might just be that we're too early. We need more adoption of the tokens before people meaningfully transact between them. That's been a little bit surprising, I think. The other dynamic that surprised us a little bit because it doesn't exist as much on Ethereum is the lending market dynamic where people who deposit ST Atom can either borrow Atom or USDC against it. And the dynamics here, I think, are a little different than on Ethereum, because for Ethereum, your opportunity cost on your ETH of actually staking it is quite high. Like, it's really hard to delegate ETH on Ethereum, just given the way the POS works. But in Cosmos, the opportunity cost delegating Atom is very low. You know, there's no need to set up a validator or anything. And so the dynamics of lending markets have played out a little bit differently than other spaces, and it's been interesting to kind of see that come alive.
Makes a lot of sense. And yeah, I think we'll be interesting to see how things develop. Some of those things you mentioned, like the dual ST pools, like may still exist, but might just be later on in terms of the sequencing. I'm curious if you guys have any like North Stars in terms of companies or protocols that you use as inspiration. Like when you think about where Stride is in 3 to 5 years, like how much do you guys think about strategy, and are there companies that you try to emulate?
It's a great question. We're really curious what Aiden thinks as well. We do think about strategy quite a bit. One observation, I think Aiden made this observation previously. We've had like 3 to 5 strategic decisions at Stride that I think have driven a lot of our growth and has made our whole journey way easier. And getting those decisions right has been really important. And so it is something I think going forward also be important. I suspect it's true of most startups too. Like a few strategic decisions around like how to structure the product or what the go-to-market is or doing A versus B, I think does result in like a really much easier life down the road or sets up for much more growth. Two companies that I think I really respect in the space that we try and lead ourselves on. One, paradoxically enough, is Lido. And Lido has done a really excellent job of executing on Ethereum. They were a thought leader in the space. They kind of developed a lot of the original literature on the subject, have done a lot of public education, and have generally executed at a really high quality level, particularly on Ethereum. Maybe a little bit less true in other spaces, but I also think they delegate that to other teams. So it's not the core team who's operating like the Lido on Polkadot, for example. But the team has done a really fantastic job also at kind of inventing a new category and then becoming quite excellent in that category. And they also do a really excellent job at being accountable to themselves and prioritize and care about kind of the health of the Ethereum network. And I think it's very respectful and there's a lot to learn there. A second team that I really respect, I think we can learn a lot from, is UIDX. I think they have the best UX of any crypto application I've used. And their team has executed phenomenally well on a few different fronts. One is just like distinguishing themselves in a very competitive market, providing a really great UX, handling a lot of the legal landscape, which is very uncertain. I think they've done a really good job navigating that and finding a solution that works really well for them, but also gives them like, you know, reasonable coverage under the law. And then they've also just done a really fantastic job building their brand, even outside of perps. Like, they have this really great NFT program that I think has attracted kind of a loyal fan base. They do some really innovative things on user onboarding that I think has really distinguished them against their competitors. And they're just one of the few crypto companies that's like very healthily profitable, like revenue generating, et cetera. Just, yeah, a ton of respect for both those teams.
Two really good examples. Aiden, any on your end that come to mind?
Yeah. So briefly on the strategy point, I thought that was really interesting, asking how we think about strategy. One thing I've observed is, I mean, it's not easy, but it's possible to say what will happen in 3 to 6 months. And I think we can also sort of say what will happen in 5 years. So getting decisions right on those timescales, I think, is really important. And we don't spend as much time on the 5-year vision. I think there's, like Vishal said, there's maybe a few key decisions that have been really important. For example, I think we're all extremely bullish on Cosmos. So choosing that, I think, is a good decision on a 5-year timescale. I think choosing liquid staking and building for that is also really important. And there are some other things that we're doing to sort of set Stride up for success. You know, we're talking to other protocols and seeing if they're willing to do protocol and liquidity, because incentives are going to run out at some point. So there's some things that we do on a 5-year time horizon. And on a 3 to 6 month time horizon, there's like lots and lots of things. There's like 50 things we're working on concurrently. I think 1 to 2 years is really hard to plan for. Like, that medium term, I think, is the most challenging, where we don't really know what's going to happen. So that's just a brief note on how we think about strategy. In terms of teams that I look up to, I think one on the Ethereum side is Aave and Sani in particular. When I was first getting into crypto, I listened to a lot of podcasts and I found him to be an extremely good communicator for someone that's not super familiar with crypto. And I think that is something that's really important and maybe a little bit undervalued. So yeah, I really admire his communication skills and, you know, kind of persisting and pushing through and building Aave and now Lens and expanding on the product. It's really impressive. And then in the Cosmos space, I think the Osmosis team is sort of like an obvious answer, but they were the first, I think, real app chain to launch. And they have an incredible UX. They have an incredible dev team. They've just done so much well. And I think most other chains in the Cosmos ecosystem sort of look to Osmosis and they've paved the way for a lot of us. So yeah, really, really admire them as well.
Yeah, I had Stani on this podcast about 8 months ago. And yeah, he's a good storyteller. Always enjoy chatting with him. So at this point, we've talked about the early stages of Stride, how you guys have gotten to where you're at. Is there anything else that you've learned in terms of things that surprised you, whether it's company building, scaling a DeFi protocol, it could be about Cosmos, like anything else? If you had an hour to talk to yourself a year ago, like what are like the three most important lessons or takeaways that you would try to communicate to yourself in the past?
Yeah, definitely. So I think there are a few sort of things that are hard to reason about from first principles. Like Vishal said, we try and make a lot of decisions from first principles, but there are some things that I think only come with experience. And there are definitely some things I wish I could have told myself a year ago. Three that come to mind. The first is the value of simplicity. One person on our team in particular, his name is John, he's our head of growth. He really, really values simplicity, mostly in marketing and communicating our message. But I've noticed in crypto where everything has so much complexity, there's engineering complexity, there's crypto economic complexity, there's just complexity everywhere. creating simple solutions is just so valuable. And I think it's valuable for a few reasons. One, like from an engineering perspective, the attack surface is smaller. From a marketing perspective, your message is clearer. You need less people to do something simple. So I've really come to appreciate the value of simplicity, especially in crypto. I think simplicity allows us to move fast without breaking things. I've really come to appreciate that over the past year. The second is something that we thought about early on was our growth and marketing strategy. And we kind of debated whether to go outside of Cosmos or outside of personal networks and like hiring a PR agency or something like that. And I think we were very Cosmos native and we only really have one or two people that work on business development. And I would say it's like 100x more impactful than if we had gone to some external PR firm. So that's another thing, a really strong lesson that I've learned. And the final one is hiring. I think tapping into our personal networks has yielded really, really great results. And hiring outside of personal networks is really challenging. We've done like hundreds of interviews and then we'll like find someone in our personal network and it'll just be one. So those are three kind of lessons that I've learned over the past year where it wasn't immediately obvious to me what the solution was, but looking back, it's much more obvious.
On the hiring front, I mean, there's endless amounts of advice and content about hiring because it's so important, but why is that? Is it because you guys have really strong personal networks? Is it because maybe Cosmos is something very specific that requires like a lot more context? Like, why do you think you guys have had a lot more luck working with folks you guys already know?
Yeah. It's a bit hard for me to say how much of this is Cosmos specific versus just startup specific. But like Vishal was saying earlier, there's some, I think, pretty unique things about our internal culture. So, you know, we like to debate or talk a lot. We also like to ship really fast. We do this like plastic knife thing where we just like saw and saw and saw and we don't spend too much time sharpening the axe. So there's all these like kind of interesting like cultural quirks that we really value. And it's just really hard to get a read on people in a simple interview. What we actually do for hiring is we have a trial period. So we bring people on. If they're in our internal network, we don't do this. But for people externally, we do a work trial. So we bring them on for 2 to 4 weeks and we build side by side. And we found that is a much, much more effective way to hire. It's, I think, especially for startups and maybe especially for crypto startups, it's just really hard to get enough signal in like a couple of hours talking to someone. But in our personal networks, we sort of know who would be a good culture fit and who has the skills. And then the work trial kind of solves for everyone else, but it's much more expensive and challenging.
Yeah. Two maybe real quick things to tie on to that. Totally agree with everything you said. On this personal network thing, I think one thing that we've found is, or it's possible in Ryan knew this before, but something that was new to me at least, is I was very surprised at how much communication style really affects your ability to work with someone or just the ability to mesh together really well. I think we've interviewed a lot of people who are clearly very excellent at their job and their role and a lot of passion for the space, but due to just a difference in like work habits or work culture, found it not as productive as other people. And I think knowing a friend from beforehand really helps make sure the communication style meshes quite well. One more quick thing. I just realized, I think there was potentially a slight tension in what we were saying before around one, like Aiden said, we take this sort of plastic knife strategy to sawing down the tree, which is just like start with something and then like keep improving after you get at it. But it's important to make progress early on with maybe the notion that we were getting of we like to spend a lot of time making sure we make the right decision and try to in tight sync on a decision. And so I just want to expand this slightly just to kind of resolve the tension. And then we spend a lot of time on strategic decisions. So anything that's like, should we do A or B strategically, or what should we spend our time on? We spend a lot of time making sure those decisions are right, like hours per decision. But on decision of after we decided to go in a certain direction, how to build that thing or what the final iteration of that should look like, I think we go much more plastic knife on that layer in terms of we know we want to build XYZ feature. Then I think we're much more like, what is the fastest path to safely get this feature production? And we don't care as much about making the thing really, really polished or making it like really scalable to millions of users or whatever it happens to be. I think on that layer, after we already decided where to go, we just care about what's the fastest we can safely get this thing live. Safe obviously being a really key qualifier there. We make sure all our code is audited and do internal audits as well. And so that's a big thing we're really reluctant to compromise on. We definitely do focus on getting something out as opposed to making it really beautiful or really scalable on the first iteration. And that's, you'll see this all throughout our code base just in general of the first version of something is often very, very ugly. And then it'll get progressively cleaned up over like the coming weeks or months.
Well, guys, this has been a really good conversation. I think really good to hear just how you guys have built Stride over the past year. And more than anything, really interesting to hear just about your guys' background, how you guys have actually built and scaled Stride, and about the team culture. I think, again, these are some of the things that we don't talk as much about, but that's what ultimately makes or break the success of a lot of these startups. So thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having us. It's always a pleasure. And honestly, we're very honored that we had you on this podcast. Given the previous lineup of guests, I think we managed to sneak our way in here. But it's lovely as always talking to you.
Yeah. Pleasure is all mine, guys.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you.